The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Emily Van Camp, from Everwood to the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Yes, a first-time guest on the pod this week, Emily Van Camp. You know her, you love her from so many television hits, from Revenge, from Everwood, from The Resident currently on Fox, and soon to be seen in the highly anticipated new entry from Marvel on Disney+, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. You guys can look forward to 6 episodes of Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan. And yes, Emily Van Camp returning to the Captain America universe. I think she's been in 2 of the Captain America films by my count. And I was really pleased to get to know Emily. As I said, she's a first-time guest in the pod. I've really never had a chance to have a conversation with her like this. And I know she's a favorite of so many, you know, television watchers, people that, like, enjoy kind of the classic, you know, hour-long network dramas. It's a lifestyle that many actors don't participate in now. Like, she's done so many hours of television. When I started to, like, crunch the numbers, hundreds of hours of network TV, which is just so not the typical model nowadays, to the point where, you know, a 6-episode run on a streaming show, I mean, that seems like a vacation. Except, of course, that Falcon and the Winter Soldier is no vacation, because the scale of this one is ginormous. I have seen the first episode, I'm allowed to say that, and suffice it to say, Marvel has not cut any corners. It still feels big and massive and global, and it has all the big movie stars just in this smaller television box. But yeah, the action is big in this one, and I'm really excited to see where this story goes. This first episode really tees up a lot of big questions and conflicts, some surprise guest stars, and excited for Emily too, because, you know, frankly, she hasn't had a ton to chew on in the MCU yet, and I think she you know, she knows that. She's kind of, I think she, I forgot how she put it, but she kind of feels like Sharon got a little bit of a raw deal along the way. So I think that this is a nice opportunity to see Emily show what she can do with this character in this series. So very psyched to see what's to come in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. You don't need me selling it. Obviously, if you listen to this podcast, you love Marvel films, so I know you're going to dig that show. So check it out when it comes to Disney+. I think the first episode actually drops this Friday. Other things to mention: Stir Crazy, new episode this week on Comedy Central's YouTube and Facebook page. We've got some big-time movie star and big-time mom energy, thanks to Jennifer Garner. I mean that in a nice way, because it was so refreshing and sweet to have this, like, beam of light on the show. I can be cynical and dark sometimes with my humor, but there's no darkness, seemingly, in Jennifer Garner, which isn't to say she couldn't have a great time. She was a great guest, game for anything, and we managed to surprise her with a guest or two, which I won't reveal right now. But check out the episode with Jennifer Garner. Very pleased with that, how that one turned out, and very pleased we were able to surprise her in a big, massive way. You'll see her just react in, like, just an authentic way, which I really, you know, it's nice to see that in the talk show kind of format, to see, like, authentic emotion and reactions. So, yeah. Jennifer Garner on Sir Crazy this week. Other things to mention. Oh, I guess we have to mention. We need to mention this. This is the big, you know, event that's been coming for years. And, you know, many of us didn't think it would happen. But, I have to say, it exists. I've seen it. Zack Snyder's Justice League. We obviously had Joe Manganiello on the podcast just last week. I know a lot of you guys enjoyed that conversation with Joe. And as I said on that one, I have seen it. I've seen all 4 hours of it, and it lives up to its title, guys. If you like Zack Snyder, you're going to love this movie. And I know he's not for everybody, and I know he's not the most subtle of filmmakers, but you cannot fault what he is able to compose on the screen. He is, you know, he's like Michael Bay. He's one of those divisive filmmakers that, like, just knows how to compose images and powerful sequences, almost, you know, they're in an echelon by themselves. So, you know, I have my quibbles with Zack Snyder and some of his films, but I will say, if you do dig his work, his style, if you dig what he's done in Man of Steel and especially Batman versus Superman, you're gonna love Justice League. And it's 4 hours, guys. It just keeps going and going, and it's not like long dialogue scenes. It's a lot of action, and it's also a fascinating film to look at, you know, as a movie buff, as somebody that follows, you know, the industry and the machinations behind the scenes. The story of this film coming into existence and the fact that, you know, he had to step away because of this horrible family tragedy and because of, you know, the conflict he was having with the studio, and the fact that he's been able to release his version after a whole entirely other version. The only other thing I can think, you know, the only other comparison I can think of is The Exorcist prequel they did like 10, 15 years ago, when there were a couple different versions of that. It was basically reshot by, was it Rennie Harlan? Did he do the second version? I don't even remember. But that's another like kind of fascinating experiment. If you want to look at another kind of film that was shot twice, go back to The Exorcist: The Beginning. I think it was Paul Schrader did it first, and then Rennie Harlan did it again. So this is on just another massive scale. I mean, Exorcist is big. Justice League is a whole nother level. I was going to say league. But anyway, you guys are going to be talking about that. We'll be talking about that on the podcast. But I do want to mention, I got a chance to talk to Zack Snyder. Had a pretty in-depth conversation. We didn't do the podcast. I think I'm going to do him for the podcast for Army of the Dead, which is coming out in just a couple months. So you can look forward to that down the line, I think. But for now, we had a significant amount of time by TV video standards to talk for MTV. So I've got that interview dropping. I believe it's going to drop this Friday, the day the movie comes out on HBO Max. Not really a spoiler conversation, but I think I asked the questions I wanted to ask about, like, the rumors about the film and some of his other DC films, where it could go. I think I hopefully asked a lot of the questions that you guys probably would want to hear him answer too, and really proud of that conversation. And I know if you dig his work and, as I said, his kind of trilogy now, the Snyderverse, that's something you're going to want to check out. My interview with Zack Snyder on MTV, and that'll be available on MTV News' YouTube page. But of course, I will send it out as well. Of course, you can always follow all of my adventures chatting with filmmakers and actors on my Instagram page, Joshua Horowitz, on my Twitter page, Joshua Horowitz. You can't ignore me. By the way, that was not my stomach making a noise. That was my dog who was whining. Lucy's been a little bit naughty this morning. I had to rescue my wife from her in the other room just now. She wasn't attacking her, but she was, I'll say it, she was humping a pillow. The dog, Lucy, was. Yeah, it's an odd, strange life being a dog parent all of a sudden. Anyway, let's get to Emily Van Camp, also a dog mom. I mean, I'm not the dog mom. My wife's the dog mom. Let's just go to the interview. Lucy's whining. She wants to hear Emily Van Camp, as do you guys. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to Happy, Sad, Confused. Here's my chat. Okay, Lucy, here it comes. Here's Emily Van Camp. I was told by your publicist just now that it might say secret guest when you came in, so I was a little bit disappointed when it just said Emily Van Camp, frankly.
No, I sorted it out. I'm so happy.
Mine, if it's any consolation, my ID for a while said PT Loner, because this is from like Viacom and I couldn't figure out how to change my name either. So we're all in this together.
Oh my gosh. I'm so bad at this stuff. For a while, it just said Josh Bowman because I was using my husband's computer. And then I realized it was saying that someone mentioned it. So it's been a process, this Zoom thing. It's taken me about a year, the whole entirety of this pandemic. But I think I figured it out.
We did it. Just as we're starting to come out of our cocoons, we figured it out, right?
Now we can go places, and I know how to Zoom, so
great. I know. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you even in this weird format, Emily.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.
Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me.
I apologize. I feel like even by my goblin standards, I'm like covered in like dog hair right now. People can't see it, but I'm
at my... Oh, I know. Yeah. Well, see, I've got my little dog chewing on a bone here, and I was worried about sound and all that stuff. And I was like, you know what? We're all home.
Standards
have
changed.
Dogs are doing their thing.
Exactly. I've got a new one, by the way.
Puppy? Yes.
She's 2 years old. She's a pit mix, but she's got puppy energy. So it's been a fun little adventure so far. She's amazing.
Have you watched Canine Intervention?
Is that on Netflix right now?
It is.
I haven't watched it, but I've noticed it in my queue. I think they're sensing I need to watch this. Should I be watching?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm just a little bit obsessed with dog training because I never train my dog. She's just quite good. And we rescued her when she was about 2.5 and she's little, so she doesn't really do much damage. And so I'm sort of fascinated by, you know, having to train your dog. And, you know, my sister just got this massive German Shepherd mix and, you know, you have to train big dogs. There's no way around it. And I'm just fascinated by it. And so now I'm trying to train my dog, but it's, you know, now she's around 5
it's
and a
too
half.
Too late. Right. Yeah.
And she's just like, are you joking? Like, no, I didn't sign up.
I am set in my ways, Emily. I'm sorry.
She does not remember her humble beginnings at all.
One of your sisters is a vet, right? Do I have that right?
She's the one who just adopted the big old German Shepherd, who's adorable, but it's a lot of work. So, you know, it's kind of nice that yours is too, because at least a little bit of that initial puppy energy is out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife's brother is a vet, and I find it, it's a nice and valuable resource to have. Like in these first couple of weeks, we're like, is this right? What do we do? Help.
It's amazing and probably really annoying for them.
Sorry. You signed up for this.
She's itching her ear in a weird way. Molly's like, Emily, I've got actual patients. Right.
Real problems.
Real problems. So just please.
So where am I catching you today? Are you in the middle of shooting The Resident? Like where are you?
I'm in Atlanta shooting The Resident. Almost done. A few more episodes left.
Nice. So how are you? And I mean, you are, and we'll get to this as we kind of like get the expansive Emily Van Camp oeuvre for this podcast. But like, you are a veteran of like the hour long, like quote unquote traditional. I mean, even if some are less traditional, but like the old school kind of way of making network programming. Like, how many episode order is the season of The Resident? How many are you guys?
So this year we did 14, just because of, you know, everything that's going on. 14 this year. Normally 22, 23.
Right.
But I mean, the fact that we've accomplished 14 in this climate has been pretty extraordinary, I think. So lots of television. I tried counting how many episodes I've done and I just stopped. So
it's crazy because, yeah, I mean, like, I didn't realize also, and you probably have from both your life and from people reminding you, like, often there's like one or two like runs, but you like have almost virtually gone from like run to run to run with some small, relatively small gaps in between. And as I was alluding to before, like, I remember talking to like Gillian Anderson about like back in the day about the X-Files, and it's like, it's almost inconceivable to most like actors now to like do like 200 hour long episodes, but you've racked up the hours. I mean, do you have like that muscle to do that? Because that's a lot. It's different than the 10 episode Netflix run for an
actor. It is, which at this point sounds so appealing. It's such a, you know,
that's a vacation.
It's an amazing kind of, you know, mysterious world to me to shoot 10 episodes. Sounds incredible. I mean, when I started, we were still shooting on film. So that makes
back
me feel
in my
so
day. Ancient. Were they talking back then?
Know, you could see us, you know, but it was, I feel it's crazy when you think about it. I was actually talking to my colleague, Matt Zuckery, who's also done a tremendous amount of television. And, you know, we both did this thing. We were competing to see who did more episodes, and then we both just stopped counting because it was stupid at that point. And, you know, just kind of reminiscing about when we first started out, and then we just started to feel extremely old, so we changed the subject. But yeah, it's been a minute. And you know, when I started in television, it was interesting because there was still that that sort of divide between film and television, and it was quite, you know, frowned upon to be on network television if you were in film, and you know, and so I kind of came up with that. With that mentality. But as my career continued, I was able to sort of venture into all of the different worlds, and that sort of started to shift and change. And now it's completely shifted and changed and turned upside down in many ways.
TV's where it's at. People, the film actors are trying to get the episode, or sometimes the network show too. I mean, it's totally, I grew up, it was totally different.
Especially, you know, now going through a pandemic, you realize how much people crave content and how valuable streaming is and being able to watch from home. And, you know, as much as we miss going to the movies and all of those, I mean, we're all missing that very much at the moment, I'm sure. And there's something still so magical about that. And I don't think that should go away at all, but I like that both worlds are colliding in such a, great way. And, there's not so much of a divide and, you know, it's really fun to jump back and forth from both worlds because they are quite different. You know, the time that you commit to them are very different. And as you were saying, you know, it's a marathon doing network television. Yeah. You know, you have to develop an insane amount of stamina. Especially if you're not shooting at home, because it's just many, many months away. But there's also something to be said for taking these characters on a very beautiful, long journey. And they all sort of hold a very special place in my heart, interestingly enough. And also in the viewers' hearts. I mean, I still have people come and talk to me about Amy Abbott from Everwood, you know, and they grew up with it, or, you know, just telling those stories over a long period of time is very special as well. So I've been very lucky to be able to dabble in all of those worlds, you know?
Yeah, it's true. There is nothing like the connection between a relatively long-running television show and the viewers, except maybe for Marvel projects. So that's a good segue into...
Keep on giving.
Exactly. And this is kind of a fascinating arc for you because, I mean, by my math, looking back, I think you were cast... back in 2013 for
almost a decade ago, I think.
Isn't that crazy? So tell me where you were at then. Were you talking about sort of like in how in recent years, obviously there's less kind of like the snooty, like, you know, big boys table and then the kids table for TV and film. But did you have anxiety about getting opportunities in film back then? It must have been a huge moment to even get in the mix for.
Oh, it was. And I wasn't in the mix initially, which was interesting. I came in the mix very, very late in the game. They had been auditioning people and meeting with people for several months, I think. And nobody knew who it was for. When I did get the call to go meet the Russo brothers, it was, you know, assumed that it might be Sharon Carter, but no one really knew.
Right.
Everything is obviously very hush-hush with Marvel. But I was shooting Revenge at the time. So I was deeply focused. I mean, it was the first TV show I'd ever led, and I was still very young. And so, you know, just super focused on that. And the call came to meet the Russo brothers, and I'd always loved the Marvel films. I'd never been super into comic books. So I didn't know much about the world, but obviously it's a world you want to be a part of. And I was a little shocked that they called, to be honest. But sort of thought, well, you know, somebody wanted them to meet with me and here we go. They're doing me a favor. They're doing that person a favor or something. I just didn't think that there was any possibility. So I remember meeting with the Russos, and then I went away for the Christmas holidays and came back, and they were going to start doing screen tests, and they were screen testing a couple of other actresses and then me. So that was shocking as well. But
this is
still
a big favor to somebody. Somebody must really owe somebody something, because it couldn't possibly be my talent. No, of course not.
No. I mean, I never think that, but I mean, it was one of those things where I just thought, oh, you know, just go and try to do the best job I possibly can. But, you know, I was also working, you know, 16-hour days, you know, trying to do this other show. So I think that helped me. It lent itself well for that moment because I was distracted enough that I couldn't obsess and freak out about it. And the screen test went really well with Chris, and still left thinking, well, it went really well. They were so nice. Everyone was so nice to meet, but I mean, it was a fun experience, you know. And 2 weeks later they called and said, oh, you're going to be Sharon Carter. And I just, the whole experience was very mind-boggling to me, because it still was a little bit strange to cross over into that world.
Sure. Did they?
Not so much, but for me, because I'd grown up with that mentality. So I never really believed that anyone, I don't know, it's that small town girl in me that never really believes that anyone really wants me to be a part of it.
The imposter syndrome that never quite goes away.
Yes. Yeah, like, no, until you, I'm like, I still feel like I'm faking it half the time, you know?
I mean, I don't know. Invariably, the people I talk to, the people that lose that are the ones to worry about, not the one. You need a little bit of imposter syndrome feel like you have to earn your right to be at the party, not to a detriment of like your mental health, but a little bit of that is healthy, I think.
Which a lot of us, I think, do allow to sort of exist at the detriment of our mental health. But no, it's, you know, that will never go away. But that was a particular moment that stands out as sort of disbelief and really having to come to terms with the fact that maybe they wanted me to be a part of the party, you know? And it was really special. And here we are. I'm still, you know, exploring this character after all these years, because, you know, that's what Marvel does. And I think it's fascinating.
Did back then, I mean, that first for Winter Soldier and Civil War, I mean, the Russos, like all the Marvel films, like stack those casts. I mean, you've got Redford, you got Sam Jackson. Like, did you remember, again, you were a veteran, you'd done a lot of work, but did it feel like both the scale, the caliber of actor you were opposite, was it an intimidating experience, and did you have to kind of get over some nerves?
Oh, it was so intimidating. There were so many moments when I was shooting both Winter Soldier and Civil War where, you know, I would be in my trailer and I would just be, you know, I have anxiety anyway, just as a human. But in that circumstance, I again just felt very, it was very out of body. I was very worried that I would disappoint, because I still sort of felt like, I don't know, that I didn't belong or something like that. You know, and you're with these people who've been working, you've admired since you were a child.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sitting with, actually one of the most comfortable moments was sitting with Robert Redford. I had a tiny scene where I just pass him in the hallway. And yet his chair was sat next to mine, which you would just assume they would never do that, you know? And I just felt so nervous and freaked out that I had been sat next to him, and we just started talking, and he was one of the loveliest, sweetest men that I had ever worked with, and we were talking about everything and anything, from family to career to, and I just, it was like one of my most relaxed moments on wow. on those sets, which I just thought was fascinating, because, you know, it's Robert Redford
no,
sitting
it's like,
right.
It's like you're sitting next to, like, here, you're going to sit next to Abraham Lincoln for a couple hours. It's like, what?
And have a great conversation with him. And, yeah. you know, for him to be just so kind with his stories and his, we were talking about, you know, Sundance Film Festival. I was just sort of sitting there, but I was so relaxed, and it was very strange, because there was just, you know, I suppose you get to a certain place in your career and there's no need for any sort of ego or, you know, and you sort of get to that place where you want to share your stories. And I just, I mean, that was an epic moment. When you think about those, like, pinch me moments in a career, it was very cool. But yes, I oftentimes would find myself like shaking before a scene, or just, you know, you just really don't want to, they're big personalities on these movies, right? You sort of have to be, and I'm more the introverted, shy type. So to find your place and to infiltrate into the group as much as you need to, but to also sort of, I don't know, I always struggled with it, but everyone is so kind and so lovely in those films that you get over it. You have to.
Yeah. Sink or swim, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it is fascinating, because I had a similar kind of conversation. Like, I talked to Lizzie Olsen for WandaVision recently, and I mean, nobody could have predicted, like, where all these Marvel properties would go and, like, just how expansive the universe would be. But, like, the fact that these Disney Plus shows are so cool, because, you know, even Lizzie, who's like playing, like, you know, a superhero, like one of, like, the Avengers, like, had way more to chew on in WandaVision, frankly, yeah. than the collective 7-8 years she was doing that character. I'm sure probably, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but arguably maybe the same for you. You probably get a little bit more to do thanks to the 6-hour length
Absolutely.
Of material.
Yeah. I mean, look, Sharon's always, you know, in many ways, she's there to service a story as well. And you always have to remember sort of what your place is within these big stories, you know? But at the same time, for me, it was very nice to get to explore also this new side of Sharon, because she's been away, she's been on the run for so many years. And so we get to see a very different side to her. And that was really fun. The idea of that was fun to explore, because I always did feel like she got shafted in many ways, you know what I mean? Not in, just because that was part of the story.
Yes.
And and that, you know, it's what I love about Marvel is they always sort of circle back, and you get that opportunity to, you know, tell that character side of the story, and these shows allow for that, which I think is great, especially for, you know, Anthony and Sebastian. You know, those characters are so loved. I've always loved those characters within the films, and you want to know more about them. And like you said before, there's just so many characters to service within these films and the universe that you never really get quite as much time with them as you'd like. And you know, you just get it in Civil War, you get a glimpse of that dynamic between them, but you never, it never expands beyond that. And here you get 6 hours of it. And I think that's just amazing for people who love that particular relationship. And also, you know, the overall arc and theme of Falcon Winter Soldier is a beautiful one, and it's time for it. And you would never get to do that in a 2-hour movie with, you know, 15 different characters that you're trying to service. So I think this platform is ideal for Marvel. It's like the best next step.
Totally. I got a chance to see the first episode. I'm not going to spoil anything here, but yes, even like got into kind of like the nitty gritty kind of day to day, like what's it like to be a superhero? Like what's the real troubles going on in these guys' lives? And I found that fascinating. You must be looking forward to, I mean, you saw what happened with WandaVision. I mean, WandaVision, week to week, it was like Lost, Game of Thrones, like one of these kind of like something that look, I love binging as much as the next guy, but like,
It
reinforced that, didn't it? Like when you saw the conversation every week, you've experienced this probably mostly on Revenge. Like there's nothing to really substitute for that kind of like communal, obsessive experience with the fans. And hopefully that'll happen again with this one.
I think so. And I think it's just very clever to, you know, to drop them like, you know, you would an old school network television show every week. I mean, it's really clever and smart on their part. And, you know, if people are invested enough, they will hit that appointment. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's sort of the best of both worlds. You have the opportunity to binge if you're super busy and you can't, you know, commit to things, but then you also can have that same kind of old school appointment television feeling. And I think that's great.
Did, the secrecy on this one, is it comparable to Civil War and Winter Soldier? I mean, did you get to read all 6 scripts before you shot anything or what?
Yeah, I mean, I would say with this, they were a little bit more forthcoming with the scripts to us, you know, which I think was really helpful to get an idea of the bigger picture. And I think because it was new to everyone shooting this type of thing and on this sort of platform, we were all sort of wondering what that would look like, I guess.
Sure.
And so there was more information for us, but in terms of the secrecy on the broader scale, I mean, it's Marvel, so it is what it is. It's like, don't say anything ever. And, you know, it's amazing how they do it. I have no idea how they keep this stuff under wraps, but I also think that everyone involved is very respectful of that because no one wants to spoil anything. And the experience was definitely different. I mean, I think they were still trying to figure out how to create those 6 hours without compromising the aesthetic, the quality, but it was a tighter schedule. I mean, it was very fast paced. It was sort of trying to do these epic 6 hours on a TV schedule, but with that movie feel.
Yep.
So we moved very fast and furious. And, you know, at time, I mean, it just presented its own challenges, I would say. We had a little more time in the movies, but I mean, when I saw the final result in all 6 episodes, it's beautifully done. And it looks like a 6-hour movie. And it plays like a 6-hour movie, but you just get that much more time with these characters. And and I think it couldn't be more perfect timing for that, you know.
When, you know, you alluded to this a little bit. I mean, presumably we'll find out sort of what filled the gap of like what Sharon's been up to in the intervening years. I mean, we haven't seen her in a bit. I mean, were you worried like when Infinity War and Endgame came and the call didn't come, like, okay, well, this was fun, but they just never found the right extension of this character. Like, how surprised were you? And can you give me a sense of the circumstances of like when they came to you with this?
I think you're always surprised when you get the call just because the expectation is, you know, there's an understanding that this is such a big universe and there are so many characters. So, you know, each experience that I've had, I just really enjoyed. And you know, you can't take it personal if they're not moving forward with a character here or there. So it was really fun when they said, now we want to see where she's been, what she's been up to. Because I always wondered that and sort of thought, you know, there was a lot of pushback about the kiss, you know, and, you know, I don't look at a lot of this stuff, but you hear about it and, you know, the backlash about the kiss in Civil War and why it was there. And, you know, so many times I just wanted to say, I didn't write it. I mean, I'm there to act and to, you know, you're not calling up the powers that be to say, I think people are going to be uncomfortable with this, or they're not going to enjoy this, or, you know, so many times I felt bad for the character.
Yeah.
You know,
well, so and now at least the burden is off. Like we, like, you know, like there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like he was meant to be with Peggy.
Yeah.
We get it. Like it's good. It's all good.
Great. Yes. It's all good. But then for me, it was like, oh, so now we can, now we get to revisit a side of Sharon that isn't so tied to Cap and the Shield and, or, you know, his version of the, you know what I mean? It was just nice to sort of make that disconnect and to see, you know, how these other characters live and exist without that connection as well. You know, it's great fun to see in these six episodes and, you know, I was just, it's always fun to revisit a character that you really love playing initially. And that's the beautiful thing about Marvel is, you know, you never know. And it's such a beautiful place to work. So yeah, we had a blast. It was great.
So going back a bit, I mean, probably most folks first remember and saw you in Everwood. Do you credit, like, is Berlanti kind of like the person that kind of made the difference in your career? He obviously cast you a few different times and different sorts of things.
Absolutely. I have so much love for Greg Berlanti. I mean, he, you know, as a kid, I started so young. I was so fortunate to have really great people around me. And Greg truly is one of the great ones, not just in his talent, but in who he is as a human. And so to have that kind of person on my side so young was the most fortunate thing I could have asked for. And he sort of, I wouldn't say groomed me, but sort of allowed me to, you know, gave me the space to grow up within an industry that can be so hard and challenging, but gave me that safe space, if that makes sense. And, you know, he was close with Kevin Williamson, who had cast me in my first thing. So Kevin was the sort of person who found me, and I did this show for him, Glory Days. But he was the one who I think introduced me to Greg Berlanti and Mickey Liddell for Everwood. Again, still such a, I was so green to the business. No, I remember meeting with them, no idea what I was getting into. And thank God they were such spectacular people. But yeah, Greg, I mean, I'm not surprised that he's gone on to become this mogul and, you know, this sort of force to be reckoned with in the industry, because he is not only that amazing talent, but he is kind, truly. And that makes a massive difference, especially when you think back to how vulnerable you were. Like now I'm, you know, 34. I think about young me, and I'm just so grateful for all of those specific people along the way who sort of cradled me and held me without me even knowing it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you see those little forks in the road where you could have gone this way, you could have gone that way. And it's really scary, you know, now that I'm an adult, I think about how I was so, so lucky.
It's, I'm happy to hear that, because, you know, as you well know, it's like, as the years go by, it's like, they get all these people that made great stuff for us over the years. It's like, they get knocked off one at a time. They're like, oh, that guy was an asshole too. That guy was an asshole too. It's like, how hard is it to be a good person, like a decent person, and make art? There's enough talented people out there that we don't need to let the assholes make.
It's so true. And I will say that, you know, I've experienced those assholes so many times. Not just men, women too.
Sure.
And, you know, you do kind of, I think when I sort of started in the business, I learned really quickly that bad behavior was not only acceptable, but sometimes rewarded within this industry. And it was really shocking to me, because I did not grow up in that kind of environment. Very lucky for the way I was raised as well. So I was able to kind of see that and acknowledge that so young, but it was shocking to me, and it always has been shocking to me. And so in many ways, I think it's very fair that a lot of these people are being exposed. But I also think that the really special ones, the people who have truly made a difference in people's lives for the better, yeah, should also be acknowledged. And Greg really is one of those people.
There's definitely some irony also in looking back at Everwood as like the unlikely superhero incubator between Berlanti as like, you know, the creator of the whole Arrowverse, et cetera.
Yes.
The irony of him on the DC side, you and Marvel, of course, Pratt ending up, yeah, as like the king of Marvel.
Yeah.
did you, I mean, you know, like, I know you were obviously close with Chris. Everybody loves Chris. He's the sweetest. But like, could you have imagined him ending up? He was a different guy. He was a different physical person. He was a different guy, yeah, at that time. Yeah. How shocking is it to see sort of where he ended up for you?
I mean, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Chris was always extremely motivated and, you know, from very early on, very career driven. And, you know, sometimes you would see that as, I suppose what I'm trying to say is he had that drive, but also the kindness, the hilarious, you know, he's just one of the funniest people I've met, I think. And so when you have all of that coupled with that drive, yeah, I'm not surprised. I saw him, I don't know, I don't know when we did the 10-year Marvel
the group photo reunion. That's crazy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just said, what happened? What happened? Good for you. You know, yeah. I know him as this goofy, funny dude, especially from back then, and couldn't be more proud of him. And everybody from Everwood, to be honest, everyone's gone off to do great things. And again, I was very lucky to be so young, surrounded by that group of people. So they hold, yeah, this very dear place in my heart.
Did you, you know, did you grow up as I take it you weren't, there wasn't acting in the industry in your family, right? That was kind of, you're the outlier there. Did you?
Yeah, no, acting wasn't even an option in my brain as a child,
right.
You know, very small town, Canada. I danced my whole life. So that was a big part of my life. I don't think I ever thought I would do that as a career, but that was sort of my creative outlet. And I went away when I was young. I studied ballet in Montreal, I think when I was around 11, and lived with a family there, and always sort of thought I would get out of, you know, my small town kind of environment, but also really missed it when I was away. Like, I have that even now where I, you know, I love what I do in my life, but I always miss home. But yeah, it was never on the table to be an actress. I just didn't think that those opportunities existed in my world. And as they sort of came, it was very organic, you know, like I started doing this acting class for fun. It was just an activity on a Saturday to do in Montreal. And then I met my manager, and then I started to work and realized I could make money doing this thing that I was loving a lot more than I loved ballet. It's like, wow, this is great. And then I just kind of fell in love. And that was, you know, I just kept working also, which was, you know, which I would never take for granted. I mean, I was very lucky for that too.
Were you especially into, I mean, every kid's into pop culture, but were you especially into TV and film? Did you like,
No, I was very, I mean, no, that's not true. I, as a young teen, I loved Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And, you know, like I would have my own, sure, kind of version of appointment television. But in terms of pop culture, I mean, my first crush was Eminem. Like, the first album I bought was Alanis Morissette, you know, first concert was Eminem, you know, like I was never into like pop culture per se. And never super into like I have a weird love for 90s action movies, like late 90s action movies, because like, that's the kind of stuff that I would watch with my friend, you know what I mean?
Right. Like, so that's not the comfort movie you chose today, but before What were some of the late 90s action?
Now, oh gosh, like I would love like Armageddon, and G.I. Jane was one of my favorites growing up, because I had never seen a woman in a role like that. And yeah, I thought she was such a badass. And even now to this day, it holds up. She is so amazing in that movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it never got the credit it deserved. And I'm sure so many people give me so much crap for saying this, but it is a great film.
I need to go back. That's Ridley Scott. That's a forgotten Ridley Scott.
Yeah. I don't know if it was because it was called G.I. Jane, like maybe it was the title. I don't know, but it's a great movie. And it was an awesome movie to see as a young teen. Like, I was obsessed with it. I've seen it a million times. And it is a comfort movie. If I see it on TV, I will always put it on in the background. And, like, there are specific scenes that I will always sit down and watch, you know, when she's, like, suck my dick and that big battle. Like, so good. But The Rock, you know. Yes. Like, all those, like, I love those. Face Off.
I mean, those movies. They're doing the sequel. Have you heard they're doing the sequel to Face Off?
No, but I'm not surprised.
Of course. Obviously.
That's so you went, I got to look that up now.
I was obsessed with Face Off. I love that you're a secret, like, Michael Bay, Bruckheimer fan.
I mean, which is so weird, but those are the movies that I watched in that time period. And, I mean, I have other, like, weird loves. Like, I love zombies as well. And I have, you know, but I did pick...
Yes, go for it. Let's hear it.
The movie that I picked, it's complicated because I've probably seen that one the most. I take these questions very seriously because, like, that's how my brain works. I like to answer this question is very loaded for me. But I think that's the one I've watched the most in moments where I really needed comfort. So
for context for people, if people listen to this podcast, they're film buffs, so they know. But it's written and directed by the great Nancy Meyers, of course, came out Christmas Day 2009. Yep. Meryl Streep, Alec Baldwin, Steve Martin, great trio. I remember I did the junket for this, and I do not get intimidated, Emily. I walked into a room with Meryl Streep, Alec Baldwin, and Steve Martin, and I could barely get a word out. That was a lot.
I had my one and only Meryl Streep experience at this party once, and I was to the point where I was shaking, and she was right there, and it was the perfect opportunity to say something, and my husband had to because I couldn't.
That's like introducing my wife to Joshua Jackson. It's a very similar kind of experience. which has happened. So why it's complicated though? I mean, I like it's complicated, but I would argue, I mean, Something's Gotta Give for me is the Nancy Meyers.
Like, yeah, I love Something's Gotta Give too. It was
why
up there.
This one?
Well, I love Meryl Streep. I think in the same vein that like G.I. Jane was like really eye-opening to me as a kid, like, wow, this is amazing watching this woman do that. I also, it's complicated, gives you that same perspective of, you know, of like this different age group that you don't normally see in rom-coms. It's not a typical thing. And Something's Gotta Give does that too. But I don't know. There's just something so comforting about the actors. I mean, Steve Martin, he just like feels like a warm hug just looking at him, you know?
Yes.
And the setting, I mean, Nancy Meyers, her aesthetic is perfect and you want to live in all of her sets. Like, yeah, that's just a given. but I don't know, something about the cooking aspect and the, you know, which is something that I love too. And I don't know, it's the movie that I tell any of my friends who are going through any kind of like sadness or breakup or anything, like, just go watch It's Complicated.
Yeah.
It'll take you out of your zone for, you know, a couple hours. And I don't know. It's like, cause I also have the kid ones, but It's Complicated is the more recent favorite.
No, I get it. I mean, it's weird to like, to put it next to Marvel movies, but in the same way that, like, you know, those, you want to kind of just like live in a world. You want to live in a world that's comforting to you, that feels like you know every nook and cranny of it, and you know the dynamics, and it's just like pleasing to you. And the soft focus, the beautiful, meticulous production design, the actors you've grown up with, it's all going to work out in the end. It's a fairy tale.
Yeah, and this mom figure who's also going through, you know, this idea that you get older and things are less complicated and nothing changes and everything's this, you know, it just kind of like, you know, debunks all of those bizarre myths. And it just, I don't know, it just makes, it's just, it's a feel good movie, but it's, you know, I think Nancy Meyers does depth really well in the midst of this, you know, really comforting, beautiful world. And
Ever auditioned for Nancy? Ever auditioned for Nancy Meyers? Ever had the chance?
I think I auditioned for It's Complicated.
One of the kids, obviously.
I think I auditioned for one of the kids.
Yeah.
but clearly I let that go a long time ago.
Hey, that's big of you. You put it aside and it earned its place as a comfort movie. Well, this was like an $85 million budgeted movie. This is like a big budgeted, glossy.
I saw that and I was shocked by that. I don't know why I was shocked by that, but I was.
Well, I mean, obviously some of it's above the line. Probably those three actors are taking it something. It's meticulous. It's a beautifully like made movie.
You just don't think about it that way. But yeah, it's huge budget and, you know.
Her movies made a ton of money. Like, that's the crazy thing. It's not crazy to think about, but like her movies were blockbusters. Like this movie made $225 million. Like Something's Gotta Give probably did the same. They all did. The Intern, even her most recent film. She is her own
Holiday.
Kind of. The Holiday.
That's a Christmas comfort movie, you know.
Yes.
it still holds up massively.
I'm saddened that Nancy has said she might not direct again. I don't know what's up with that.
I think that's crazy. I don't know why. I don't know why, because it's like, even if she writes something, you want her to add her world to it. You know? It wouldn't be the same without it at this point.
So let's wrap up by talking about what you're knee deep in right now. Talk to me about what has made this latest foray into network television exciting. You're in season four already of The Resident? Yeah. Time flies when you're making network dramas.
And every time I say, you know what, I'm just going to take a break from it. And I don't know why I keep being drawn to it again. It's that idea of playing these characters over long periods of time that I really like. And I don't know, maybe it is time to step out of that, because it's become sort of comfortable for me in a weird way. But I still enjoy it. So I'm a workhorse at heart. That's the sort of background that I come from. And you kind of have to be to do network television, because it's not easy. It's a tough medium. And it's like I said, we were saying before, it's a marathon, you know, you have to be, equipped for that in a weird way. And it taught me everything I know, because now you can be thrown into these big environments or these other, you know, you can basically, if you do network, you'd be thrown into any acting environment and thrive in some way, because you have that work ethic and that, you know, that those tools, I guess. Here we are, fourth season. You know, I never thought in a million years I'd do anything medical related. But more than ever, it feels relevant, especially having gone through this past year. It's been really nice to be able to honor all the medical professionals. I mean, like, they're the real life heroes that oftentimes are overlooked. And if ever there was a time to be so grateful for everyone in that field, this past year has really highlighted everything that they do. And, you know, we work with medical professionals every day, you know, advisors on the set and people who actually went and worked on the front lines during this pandemic, left their homes to go to New York when there was a massive crisis there, to go to, you know, where they were needed. And you really just see how significant and huge what they do is. And so to be able to play that every week has been, nicer than ever, really. It's in this small, minute way that we can honor everything that they've done, especially.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, yeah, living in New York this past year, you know, the daily kind of like, you know, shouting out.
There during that, I'm assuming.
What's that?
You were there during the
whole time.
Yeah.
Craziness. And you've been able, I mean, it's kind of a miracle that like Hollywood has been able to make, you know, adapt. You guys finished Falcon and Winter Soldier.
That was the first thing I came back to Atlanta to do. I think that was a little scary for everybody. Because we were just implementing those protocols and then The Resident started up right after that. And, you know, it's been a learning curve for everybody. I'm sure everyone that you've spoken to who's working at the moment has said it's strange, but, we're making it work, and it's a miracle that we are, really.
Well, there's hope in sight. I got my first dose the other day. We're all getting healthier. Yes, I'm very lucky. We're all lucky to still be here, still working. Knock on wood, things get better. I think they will. I'm trying to stay
optimistic. They have to. I mean, things will turn around and you know, I mean, I'm sure this past year has taught us all a ton in so many different ways. So
yes.
I'm very happy for you, though. That's great. And yeah, please continue to stay safe.
You too, Emily. Thank you for the time today. I really appreciate it. Congratulations on the new show. Not that you need my voice to add to the billions waiting for Falcon and Winter Soldier, but the first episode's awesome, and I can't wait to see what Marvel has in store. Stay safe out in Atlanta, and hopefully we'll see each other out of our cocoons soon enough.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.